Good evening and welcome. It's KBC Arts. I'm David Fleming. Tonight we'll have Estelle Quapio in conversation with John Jennings, editor of a comics publishing line called Megascope, which highlights stories of people of color. Later in the program, I'll be speaking with Sharon Lavery, guest conductor for the San Bernardino Symphony Orchestra's upcoming concert featuring Gershwin and some Melissa Manchester. First, though, Crystal. That's Cirque du Soleil on ice skates. I spoke recently with one of the performers, a juggler, Jorge Petit, also the publicist for Crystal, Julie Desmarais.
Crystal is, she's the lead character, so the show was named after the main character. She is a teenager that's looking for her purpose in life. She is a bit different. She's a misfit, and she doesn't feel like she sometimes fits at home or at school or in general, and she ventures on the pond and the ice breaks, and from there adventures start. She takes us on this journey at a very high speed. It's a journey of her own imagination. She creates this world and she meets her reflection, which is kind of a darker side of her, but the reflection guides her through this journey and shows her the different opportunities. And she finds the strength to be who she wants to be and showcases her differences by finding that she is creative and she is curious and she is very confident.
Nice. So when we have, you mentioned this darker side, this reflection of her, do we end up with two different performers? So we have truly the Anakin Skywalker versus the Darth Vader of Crystal, or do we have, maybe it's just changed with the mood lighting and whatever. What differentiates the two sides?
I think the reflection is more gutsy. She knows who she is and she kind of guides Crystal in this journey, but it's two different characters. They're the two lead characters. You can recognize their reflection by her costume, that's a darker blue than Crystal. The way her hair, her style are in opposite. So Crystal's braid is on the right, the reflection will be on the left, and then the same way they'll wear their scarf in opposite ways to actually identify both characters. The reflection is the character that guides her through this journey, and she shows her the different possibilities to realize and to find who Crystal is.
Cool. So this does seem like it's much more of a storyline-driven performance as opposed to the general theme, like, the Michael Jackson version of, there are various Cirque du Soleils. Je ne parle pas français, so I may be just ignorantly stating Cirque du Soleil, but there's been so many different versions.
Yes, we do have different performances. Crystal is very different, not only because of the ice, but because there is a very clear narrative. So there are some narration throughout the show that guides the audience to what's happening in the performance. There's also, we use the ice as a projection canvas. So there is also some projections on the ice and onto Crystal's house that actually guides the audience through what's happening in the story. So they change environment without them changing seat, which is a very unique character and feel to the performance.
It seems like a lot of what might be addressed with set construction is with lights and just defining certain areas for different moods.
Exactly, but there's also the talent. We see Crystal evolving in this story. Jorge plays as part of her imagination, and she meets him and she plays with papers and he shows her something, and then she's evolving and she sees her life from above and she evolves in that story as we go, and this is assisted by projection and the narrative.
Nice. Jorge, I read your bio. It talks about, juggling at this point for some 17-plus years. Most people have not done anything for 17-plus years, and you've been juggling for that long. Your bio talks about the creation and performance of solo acts. This is early in your career, let's say, before even going to the circus school. So when we're talking about these developing and performance of solo acts, what kind of acts are we talking about, and what kind of places would you be performing at? Are we talking busking in the streets? Are we talking about getting gigs at an auditorium? What type of thing are we talking about here?
There is a big, big juggling community. In Chile, where I'm from, it's really popular. Like, people do it in the street, something like you actually can learn on the street. And we do have, like, a bunch of small juggling festivals in Chile and, South America and Europe. So I started creating acts by myself and performing on this festival. So I started like that. And it was just, like, me being curious about, performing, and I really wanted to develop something new and a language that will differentiate me. So from other jugglers. When I moved to Canada, I did street shows and I did like bigger festivals, not only juggling festivals, but music festivals and stuff like that. And I worked with small companies. But at the beginning, it was mainly juggling and circus festivals.
Okay. Now, there's a phrase that caught me, expressing your ideas while developing your own style of juggling. Is it possible to talk about this style and make it clear for people, I suppose, compared to other juggling acts that a person may see?
Yes. So what I do, I try to develop a mix in between juggling and movement. I dance a lot in life. I like hip-hop dance, and I do that regularly. And I took a lot of classes, too. So I kind of mix both disciplines, the dance and juggling, because I was telling you before that in Chile it's super popular, and jugglers are really good in Chile, technically. So when I first started, I wanted to be different, so I kind of developed my own language, like through movement, I create my own style, I create my own tricks, so people will recognize me because I was different, and maybe I wasn't able to do like big tricks, but I have a different style than the other ones. I will move more and use more of the space and a lot of movement and dance.
All while juggling.
Yes.
My gosh. Is it possible to actually trademark a certain type of juggling or maybe the manner in which you perform? If you see somebody else performing a hip-hop oriented juggling act, is it possible for you to say, no, that was mine first? I mean, actually legally.
I don't think so. I think if it was like maybe I invented a new prop or a new, I don't know, some machine or something, like it was really specific for one act, maybe. But I think this is more, it's universal. And like when I say I create tricks, I did, but also, you know, I took inspiration from different things. So I really believe that the ideas are for everyone.
Sure.
You need to make them for yourself. So you translate these ideas on your body and how your body reacts.
You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR, streaming at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Julie Desmarais and Jorge Petit with Cirque du Soleil Crystal. That'll be at Citizens Business Bank Arena in Ontario, March 13th through the 17th. Julie, are you actually traveling with the group, say, as opposed to an advanced person of some sort?
I'm lucky. I do travel with the group. I'm very inspired by all the joy and the dedication that everyone has, either on stage or behind the scenes with the crew. Everybody always want to give their best for every single day and a big inspiration. So I feel very lucky and privileged to the opportunity of being able to travel with the group, but also discover every city we perform to and meet people every week. That's really a big privilege for me.
Absolutely. As publicist, what are your duties with the group, I suppose, specific to the tour, as opposed to maybe in the larger picture with the company?
I represent the show. I act as a spokesperson. I work on my creativity in a certain way by developing events that would attract and always promote the show in the way that respects Cirque du Soleil, their brand, but also that is related with the concept of the performance. I always find new ideas to promote our shows. And we do have 11 different touring shows, so it's really important to differentiate every performances. And also one of my key roles is to do education, because Cirque du Soleil, there are many branches. We have shows in Las Vegas. We have touring shows. There are different special projects. As publicists, we want to associate Crystal and the lines and our keywords to the show we work on.
And you are specifically only with Crystal? You're not handling maybe a couple of the Vegas show as well as Crystal, etc.?
No, every show, every performance at Cirque du Soleil are a company in itself, and every shows are represented by a publicist on tour. The resident shows also have some publicists that represent their shows. But I've been fortunate enough to be touring for 9 years now with Cirque du Soleil, and Crystal is my first ICE performance. It's my third tour with Cirque du Soleil, and every show are different and bring their own character.
You know, I think Cirque du Soleil on ICE in general would be the first time anybody could have even dreamt of something like this. And I don't know when I first became aware, probably a good 17 years after the creation, you know, sometime in the mid to late 90s, I suppose, is when I first saw it on some video presentation. And what a person sees there, you just can't imagine doing it on ice. And Gosh, I'll address that specifically with Jorge in a bit. But Jorge, before we get to that, after you were accepted into the professional program at the Circus School of Quebec, some maybe 6 years ago, roughly or so, I read that you specialized in juggling and in the Cyr wheel. So this is where I suppose I ask you to break down 2 years of training in 2 or 3 minutes. How does something like that work for a person studying there? Do you have a week of, say, 2 ball juggling, then 3, then 5, and then we add fire? What kind of training regiment does a person go through in the Circus School of Quebec for what you did?
It's a school, so you have classes, actual classes. Classes meaning training. Mm-hmm. So you have a specific coach. I had a specific coach for juggling. Now we do like 2 to 3 hours per day just with me and my juggling coach. Mm-hmm. And then I will have a Cyr wheel like 2 times per week, and it was only like 1.5 hours or 2 hours. But we also have different other classes like dance, circus history, promotion, movement, acting classes. In circus school, they kind of prepare you to be able to do different stuff and be super good at your main discipline.
Sounds very well-rounded, an actual school, as opposed to just focusing on the juggling or whatever. That's fascinating that you get the history and promotion and all that.
Yes, it's super helpful for someone who wants to build a career in circus.
I understand that maybe just a few years ago, February of 2016, Cirque du Soleil actually reached out to you, as opposed to, I suppose, they had an audition and you were one of a bunch of people. I understand this is quite curious. The casting team actually looking for a juggler who had dribbling, juggling, and skating experience. I can't imagine those three together, first of all.
Yeah, so I knew how to roller skate. I never skated and juggled at the same time, so that was something new. So they asked me for a video of me skating, so I just skated a little. And then I sent a juggling video, and they liked my style on juggling because I had something different to bring. My skate skills, they were good enough to start with ice skating, with something that I never done before. So it took 3 to 4 months for me to be comfortable and mix both disciplines.
Yes. So, you did not ice skate before this, just roller skating.
No.
Oh, my gosh. So did you break anything? I can't imagine. I mean, I'm talking about bones, collarbones, stuff like that.
No, like I wouldn't do like jumps or whatever. It would be like just skating.
Gotcha.
But for sure, I felt a couple of times, but it's part of it, and it wasn't really major.
Sure. And yeah. Then as far as the audition tape that you sent in, did this show you doing the juggling with some of the hip-hop routine?
No, actually, they just asked me for a technical demo, so I just sent some tricks and some sequences I had. For sure, I showed like the sequences I do where I kind of dance, but they didn't ask me specifically for that. Mm. It was mainly just see my juggling.
When you tape yourself juggling, what is something that you make sure to include? Like, okay, this is going to get me hired. So many people can juggle, say, just 2 balls, but not everybody does it on fire on a unicycle, 18 fire. Feet, you know, whatever. What did you do?
I think it's my style. I have a good technical level too, so I try to show that first and then, you know, show what I do, what's different. I like to call it like my own style. And actually, when I talked to the director after that, he told me that he found interesting the way I juggled, so that's why they picked me.
Okay. So what type of traveling schedule goes with the show?
We travel on a weekly basis. So we spend an average of 1 week in every city we perform. So we typically arrive either very late on the night of Sunday to Monday or during the day of Monday. All the cast will have Monday and Tuesday off. We'll have a big validation and training day on Wednesday from 11:45 to about 4 or 5 o'clock. And we'll premiere on the Wednesday. We'll do 7 to 8 shows a week. On the Sunday after the second show, the crew will be, with the assistance of about 100 local stagehands, we'll pack everything back into the semi-trailers. We have 17. They will go to the next city, and then depending on the trip duration, we'll either bus to the next city or take the plane to the next stop.
You actually get to see a bit of where you go. That's phenomenal. Now you're in Seattle at the moment, right?
Yeah, we're currently in Everett in April, but we are here on an advance trip. And then we're heading to West Valley City in Utah. And the show will be ready to open on Thursday night.
Nice. Okay, gotcha. Julie, I think you're in more of a position to see audience reaction? I mean, Jorge, we hope for applause and the oohs and ahs. I mean, we hope for that every day. But Julie, you know, out in the lobby or maybe in the house, what are you hearing either through maybe direct conversation or skillful eavesdropping, perhaps?
I have to say that the audience reaction is really favorite. I watch the first show every week, but also then as the week evolves, I will go from time to time, watch different bits of the show to see how the audience will react. And it's always amazing to see what's their reaction, the clapping, but also the smiles. For me, once the performance is over and I see everybody standing or having big smiles, and if we inspire them at the same time, it makes me very proud, but it makes me very happy. And the comments we hear, how can they do this on ice? And the storyline seems to touch a lot of our audience member in different ways, because I think we can relate somewhat.
As it is a story of finding of oneself, it's a coming of age story. It doesn't matter, I suppose, whether you're a boy or girl, young or old, you can relate to some period of discovery and needing to know oneself better, I suppose.
Exactly. I think at any point, sometimes we feel a little bit different and we kind of look for what brings us. And it just shows that there are a lot of opportunities and to always be open. I think when we created Crystal, we have the skating world and the circus world, and everybody was really excited by the project and the opportunity, but also by learning something new and bring something new into their skill set.
Beautiful. We're close to wrapping, by the way. I just have a couple more things, and this is, I suppose, for both of you. This isn't going to get you in trouble with the company, like, how soon are you leaving? But I am curious what you would hope to move on to from here. Let's just say it's not going to be in the next month or two or even year or two. Let's just say eventually. Julie, is it more the administrative side? Do you want to grow within this company, move on to something larger? I mean, where does a person go from the publicity?
I actually really enjoy what I do. It always keeps me on my toes. It drives my creativity. So I feel very fortunate of this opportunity. And because I like to travel so much at the moment, I don't see myself doing something different. I'm in a happy place and I love the tour. We are a good group of people and that makes my job very easy. So at the moment, I don't see myself anywhere else because I just enjoy what I do.
And Jorge, as far as, you know, say a professional athlete of any kind, well, I don't know if I never put the jugglers into the professional athlete category, but I think what I'm saying is here that, say, a football player or somebody, they expect to maybe only be able to do it until they're a certain age. What about you and something like this? Do you move on to choreographing, designing? What about you?
So I have a lot of different interests in, I have other projects. Some other stuff I would like to try for sure, but I really see myself juggling a long time. Jugglers, we're lucky that we can actually juggle for a long time. Like an acrobat, maybe we have a shorter career. But we as jugglers, we can juggle, you know, until 50, 55, 60. So I see myself juggling for a long time, but there is some other stuff I would like to try too. I really like design.
I'd love to hear each of you describe something that you see with each and every performance that still blows you away. You know, maybe you even find yourself holding your breath until the execution of whatever it was is complete. I don't care how many times you've seen it. There's got to be something, I'm sure, with a show like this.
It's really hard because what Crystal really brings a new dimension to shows like skating shows and acrobatic shows because of the motion and the speed of skating and the way some of the acrobatics are done with ice skates. It really brings the performance level to a little different than what you could expect. I think the willingness of everybody of jumped into this project and do what they do with such happiness is one of the things that surprises me the most. And for our guests that will come and enjoy the show in Ontario, I think seeing the ice skating combined with acrobatics, either it's the extreme skaters when they do the ramps, Jorge on the juggling, performing on ice, like doing a duo performance where you skate and juggle at the same time. So your focus has to be on two different groups of muscles that don't always work together when you do a traditional juggling act. And seeing eye-flying acrobatics with acrobats that actually wear ice skates to do swinging trapeze or a combination of skating and aerial straps where you have a Crystal that flies. I think all of these will surprise our guests.
Jorge, I don't know, does this go beyond not falling over on the ice while you juggle? What continues to blow you away each time?
I think it's just watching my coworkers train. For sure, we get to, you know, see the show every night or see what your coworkers do. Sometimes you forget, you know, like, I think we have one of the best balancers in the show, and he will be training, and I will be on my phone, like, I don't care. But when I actually, you know, I open my eyes and I realize what he's doing, I'm always amazed. And that happens with all my coworkers. It always blew my mind. Sometimes I forget. We're used to it, but when I pay attention to what they do in a daily basis, I'm always impressed.
Nice. I look forward to seeing you folks, and even more so, I greatly appreciate you taking the time to speak with me.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Julie Desmarais and Jorge Petit with Cirque du Soleil Crystal. That'll be at Citizens Business Bank Arena in Ontario, March 13th through the 17th. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. Streaming at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Later in the program, I'll be speaking with Sharon Lavery, guest conductor for the San Bernardino Symphony Orchestra's upcoming concert with Melissa Manchester, as well as some Gershwin selections. First, though, a quite timely story in the realm of fantasy, comics, graphic novels, and more.
You're listening to 91.9 KVCR and kvcrnews.org. I'm Isel Quapio. Black Panther and Into the Spider-Verse brought comics about people of color to the big screen this year. But a UCR professor says this kind of attention is exciting, but overdue. I spoke with John Jennings, who's the editor of a comics publishing line called Megascope, which highlights stories of people of color. The publishing line will include lots of genres, including Afrofuturism, which explores the experiences of black people through science fiction. We talked about why representation is so important and what he's doing to make the industry more inclusive. So why is it important for more representation and inclusion of artists of color, specifically in graphic novels and comics?
Everyone who participates in society deserves to see themselves reflected in that society. And I think that when that doesn't happen, it actually works against people's self-esteem. This kind of erasure is very detrimental. And actually, you know, there's a lot of people from various backgrounds who love science fiction and fantasy, but, you know, always like, man, I wish that I could actually see myself in that future.
This broad sort of category of, like, speculative fiction, it almost seems like the perfect type of genre through which, like, artists who maybe are not as represented can tell their stories that seem to be often, like, othered or not as told.
I mean, I think it's interesting, particularly when you look at something like dystopian fiction, where or post-apocalyptic fiction, where different systems of control have kind of like been destroyed or have crumbled. I mean, on one side, it's like that's horrific, and you know, society is in turmoil. But you know, on the other side, like when you see those particular systems kind of fall away, then you know, our humanity is kind of exposed.
Now let's talk about the name of the imprint, Megascope. So, what is the name referencing, and why is it fitting for the imprint?
Two scholars, Adrian Brown and Britt Russert, they were actually going through W.E.B. Du Bois's papers for a collection of his fiction works. And so they come across a third science fiction story that they didn't know that he had written. It was in his papers. The piece is called The Princess Steel, and it was written in like 1909 by Du Bois. And in it, he uses this device that's created by one of their characters as a framing mechanism for this allegory, like this kind of science fiction fantasy allegory. But the device is called a megascope, right? And so the megascope is this device that can see into other dimensions or see through time and space. And so I thought it would be a really great name for an imprint because of how it's used in his story as a framing mechanism, but also the idea of looking into other possibilities, right? Mm-hmm. And also the fact that this is a story that was discovered that had been just waiting for us to find it.
It's Black History Month, and I would like to know, what are some of your graphic novel recommendations that we should be adding to our reading list for the month?
Besides Kindred, you know, our graphic novel adaptation,
right?
Okay, but with Kindred, you should probably be checking out the new Showtime at Apollo book. Is really awesome. It just came out from Abrams Comic Art. And also, I would look at something like the Thelonious Monk graphic novel that just came out a little while ago. There's also a graphic novel about Josephine Baker from Self-Made Hero that is pretty great.
Now, John, as an academic and now curator of a publishing line, how do you hope to continue increasing diversity and inclusion in this space and produce comics that truly are for everyone?
I guess just kind of keep doing what I'm doing. I mean, I think that, you know, right now we're in a very interesting moment where, you know, Afrofuturism and Black speckled culture have become mainstream. The work I've been doing has been on all fronts as far as, like, service, as, you know, creating spaces where, you know, Black artists and people of color can create these types of narratives and sell them independently, basically making work myself, you know, and creating work for pedagogical purposes to kind of talk about these issues.
John Jennings is a celebrated designer, curator, illustrator, and cartoonist. His creative and academic work centers around intersectional narratives regarding identity politics and popular media. Jennings provided the illustrations for the graphic novel adaptation of Octavia Butler's Kindred and is now working on the graphic novel adaptation for Parable of the Sower. For KVCR News, I'm Isel Quapio.
Thank you, Isel. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Online and on mobile devices at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. The San Bernardino Symphony Orchestra's next concert is March 16th at the California Theater of Performing Arts in San Bernardino. I spoke recently with guest conductor Sharon Lavery. Concert with the San Bernardino Symphony is coming up. Some Gershwin, some Melissa Manchester, and I don't think I've ever phrased that together before. before talking about the concert, I would like to hear a bit on you. You're currently at the Thornton School. That's at USC. This is maybe almost as old as USC itself. It's maybe even the oldest in the country, I think I read.
That's correct.
Just to note, before LA even had electricity, this school was in existence. Talk about what you do there and really what the Thornton School is, because there's a combination. It's not conservancy per se. It's not traditional university studies per se. Talk about what the Thornton School is.
Sure. Well, currently I'm the resident conductor of the wind ensemble and the orchestra, and my position is very unique. In fact, I don't know of any college, conservatory, school of music in the country that's doing what we do. So with my role with the Thornton Symphony, I usually cover or conduct one concert, sometimes two, per year. We have a principal conductor, Carl St. Clair, who is also the conductor of the Pacific Symphony. And so what we do is I prepare for Carl. He usually does about three concerts. And then we have guest conductors that come in and conduct our students, and I prepare for those guest conductors as well. So we'll usually start with some sectional rehearsals, separating the winds, percussion, strings, and then we put a 2T rehearsal together, which I always conduct, and then the professionals come in to take over. So we've had people like Michael Tilson Thomas, John Williams, Essa Pekka Salonen, these high-caliber type professional conductors that come in to a prepared orchestra. So that's sort of my role, and I also teach conducting as well. I teach instrumental conducting 1 and 2, undergraduate, graduate, and I also teach some private conducting students. These are doctoral students who are getting a minor in conducting.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Since we just referenced it a moment ago, do you mind addressing briefly the difference between, one might say, a traditional university studies and a conservancy type of atmosphere, and I guess the combination that the Thornton School offers, unless I'm misunderstanding it?
No, you're spot on. This is what makes the Thornton School of Music so special, in my opinion, is that we've got it all. We've got, you know, a conservatory style focus. You know, our students are very serious, very dedicated, very focused on their music and their specific instruments. But yet, we also have one of the best research universities in the country. So we have a lot of students that are actually double majoring. You know, we have a violinist who's getting his bachelor's in violin performance and doubling in engineering. And that's not uncommon. We have a lot of students doing that because they can, because it's all here. And I think that's what makes USC and Thornton so special.
Wow, nice. Ooh, we might get you more majors out of this. I don't know if anybody's going to be listening for that. That's really cool. And where did you study before landing in L.A.? Are you a part of SAI?
I am. I was in SAI at New England Conservatory, which is where I got my first master's in clarinet performance. I started passionately about music education. I knew I always wanted to teach. It's just something I always had a passion for. So I started at a music education school at Michigan State University, which has a very strong music ed program. And following that degree, I figured, you know, I was playing pretty well at the time, so I decided, you know, get my master's in performance, focused studying on clarinet, get that done right away. So that's when I went to New England Conservatory. And then following that master's, I knew it was about time to get a job. You know, calling home and having dad answer, how much do you need?
Yes,
you know, that kind of got old after a while. So I actually taught in the public school system for 5 years. I had a high school band. I ran the elementary program. We team taught. I always had that conducting interest in mind. So during the summers of teaching, I was always doing these conducting workshops around the country, just trying to, you know, improve my skills as a conductor. And after 5 years of teaching at the public school system, I thought, you know, if I don't try this conducting thing now, it's never going to happen. So I applied to the University of Southern California to study with Jung Ho Park, and I made it into the program, and the rest is history. So.
Beautiful. And I hope you do still pick up the clarinet and put down the baton occasionally.
I'll tell you, it pains me because I don't as much as I should. You know, I did overhaul my clarinet 2 summers ago, and it was one of the best things I've ever done because it did encourage me to, you know, just dust it off and get out and play it again, and it was wonderful. But at the same time, I know what I used to sound like, and, you know, when you're not in good physical condition as far as playing, it's hard. It's hard to not sound as good as you once did. So.
Sure, sure. And we will always be our own biggest and harshest judges, I think,
Correct.
Too, regarding that.
Correct. Wow.
Okay, Sharon, we're going to be speaking, of course, about the upcoming concert by the San Bernardino Symphony Orchestra, Melissa Manchester, and some Gershwin. However, I would like to delay that conversation just a bit more because I read something on you. I'd like to hear of a recent concert you conducted maybe 6-7 months ago. I hope this is a recurring thing, too, so far. Talk for a moment, please, about the Future is Female concert event. Yeah, this was organized by KCRW in association with the Alliance for Women Composers and Live Nation.
Yes.
This is, all of these things are just sparking interest. The concert itself, the Alliance for Women Composers. Can you break this down for us here?
Well, this is the beauty of living in Los Angeles because I was contacted by the Hollywood Chamber Orchestra to conduct this fabulous Future is Female concert. We did it over at the Wilton. And was a combination of film music that some of the pieces actually had live visual.
Oh, cool.
Scenes,
right,
if you
right.
Will.
Yeah.
It was very cool. And I conducted about 4 of the works, and then the other 4 were conducted by the female composers themselves. So they had a choice. Some of them were eager to get up there, and some of them were scared to death of the podium. So that's when I was called in. And they were all, you know, 6-7 minutes in length. Some a little longer, and they were all fantastic pieces of music, and it was really successful, very well attended. I just felt really fortunate to be a part of that.
Yeah, I would think. You've performed at some of the most wonderful and beautiful concert halls in the country.
I've been very lucky.
And something like this is, I don't want to say a notch on your belt or something, you know, but it's something to be a part of, though. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I felt so fortunate.
And since that was the second annual, do you happen to know if there's going to be a third?
I'm hoping.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I know that it was a tremendous amount of work to put together, but I think it was very successful. In fact, there was a composer on that program, Pinar Toprak, and she was one of the composers that decided to conduct her own work. And she is now the composer of the upcoming Captain Marvel movie.
Oh my.
I'm not sure if that concert gained her some exposure, and that's, you know, part of the reason. I'm not sure, but just to know that she was part of that same concert was pretty special.
And this seems like such a natural and a wonderful step as far as a female empowerment type of thing, being a part of this concert, and now she's going to Captain Marvel, which is being presented as a female, and this is a newish thing as well.
Exactly.
So that's again, just really, really cool.
It's exciting times, and it's exciting times to be in Los Angeles.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you have John Williams living down the street.
Can exactly.
You just, stop there, you know, so.
Exactly.
You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Streaming live at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Sharon Lavery, guest conductor for the San Bernardino Symphony Orchestra's upcoming concert with Melissa Manchester, as well as some Gershwin selections. Well, let's talk about the San Bernardino Symphony Orchestra.
Sure.
And the performance. This is March 16th at the California Theater of Performing Arts here in San Bernardino, 7:30 p.m. Of course, musicians would not do this at 7:30 a.m. unless you're just still up, I suppose. But
I always tell my class when we start at 10 a.m. I always say, now for musicians, that's early. So,
yes,
you know.
Yes, yes. How did you end up with the symphony for this? At one point, Frank Polfetta was the main baton behind this, and it seems like there are several guest conductors during this season.
Yes, they actually are searching for a new music director, and they have had this search for the past 2 years now, so they have been bringing in guest conductors for 2 years. I'm one of them, lucky enough, and I was approached by the president of the board of directors, Dean McVeigh.
Oh, okay.
I was approached by him if I would be interested in working with Melissa Manchester. You know, they're trying to, as we all are, they're trying to expand their audience. And, of course, I'm all for that. So I immediately said, of course, you know, anything to expand the audience, I'm for. So once we had that in place, we knew that was going to be the second half of the program. I had to come up with a first half that would entertain this new expanded audience. I know that I needed to find a composer that might be able to, you know, bridge that gap between pop music of Melissa Manchester and classical music.
Yeah, well,
and so, of course, the first composer that popped in my head was Gershwin.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, who doesn't love Gershwin? So that's sort of how we came up with the Gershwin first half, that sense of popular music combined with classical music. So I'm hoping it's going to work out. I'm confident that it will.
And I'm excited about this. I love Gershwin as well. And as a bridge, as you said, between classical and pop, that is it. That is Gershwin. So when a symphony has this guest conductor or that guest conductor, in this case, we're speaking with this one, you pick the music, or is it they have the season and fit it with someone who has the background and availability? How does that sort of a thing work? Or do they just say, we have the slots?
I think that guest conducting positions are all different. For instance, what we do at USC is Carl St. Clair and I plan out the year, and we know what pieces we want our students to learn and what we think they should know. And so when we invite a guest conductor, we tell them, we would love for you to consider, you know, doing Mahler 6. We haven't done that piece in several years, and we feel like students need to learn it. Would you be willing to conduct that piece? So that's how it works at USC. For something like this, I was really fortunate to be given the opportunity to choose my own music. I looked back at their history of repertoire over the past, 10, 15 years. So I sort of got an idea of pieces that they like to program, et cetera. And so, I just felt really lucky that I was given that liberty to pick my own music.
Oh, truly. Let's address these then. Rhapsody in Blue, this features pianist Bernadine Blaha.
Yes,
and
she's a colleague of faculty here at USC.
Yeah.
And a wonderful pianist, an amazing pianist.
Then, did you pick Bernadine because you had Rhapsody in Blue, or did you pick Rhapsody in Blue because you had Bernadine?
What a great question. I'll tell you, sometimes we pick music logistically, and I will say that for Melissa Manchester's set, we know that we have a beautiful grand piano, and we know that it's there. So the first thing I think of, okay, what can I utilize that beautiful grand piano for? And so immediately I thought of the Rhapsody in Blue. You know, everybody loves the Rhapsody in Blue. So that's sort of how I originally came up with that idea. And then it took me 2.4 seconds to know who I wanted because I've been trying to work with Bernadine Blaha for years. And finally, this was a time that I thought would be perfect. We've got Melissa Manchester. We've got me. Why not add a third female?
I'm glad you addressed that because the selections then, we're looking at several pieces from Porgy and Bess. we're looking at a medley of some sort, or in essence, Summertime and pick a couple of others, or are you actually doing several pieces? How is Porgy and Bess can be handled?
This is a piece called Catfish Row, which he wrote after the opera was premiered. He wrote it about a year after. And the original opera is 4 hours long, so I think he realized this is too much music if he wanted to ever have it be performed in a concert setting. So he actually made this suite specifically to play in a concert setting. And so he kept all the goodies, you know, Summertime, I Got Plenty of Nuttin', Bess You Is My Woman Now, all these wonderful gems of songs. But what I love about the Catfish Row is it also has some of those orchestral gems that we never get to hear. So it's sort of a combination of both the songs and some of the great orchestral work that was from the original opera.
Nice, nice.
Yeah, so it's got a little bit of everything.
And the pieces that were selected then, do you look at flow or even narrative? Especially in a case like Porgy and Bess, you can go with narrative, but you know, some folks will look at a narrative flow of timeline or location of composition. So I'm wondering how you handle that.
Yeah, I definitely look at flow of each half, which is why I selected Strike Up the Band to start. I mean, what better way to start a concert than that fabulous march? And then flowing in from that excitement was the Catfish Row to be used as that orchestral, meaty, hearty orchestral piece. I'm not sure how else to explain it. As
I think
said,
meaty works.
meaty work that the musicians can just dig their teeth into. And again, it's not just about the lovely songs that Gershwin wrote. It's about his really wonderful abilities as a composer. And then from there, of course, to flow into the Rhapsody in Blue, the flashiness, the jazziness. I felt like all of Gershwin's music, the flow was just beautiful.
Absolutely. And you being a clarinetist, I saw Eddie Daniels open up Rhapsody in Blue before it all happened. And so I'm just picturing this. But it's not going to be you, is it? You're going to have somebody else.
These are the times where I do regret replacing my baton with my clarinet, because these are the times that I would love to be playing that opening lick.
Yeah,
I mean, that's one of my favorite licks of all time. In fact, I used to do that lick all the time in high school, and I knew I was going to be a clarinetist for life after that lick.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's one of those. You know, it's...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so the second half, it looks like then what's presented on the flyer is indeed the order of the concert. We're going to have Porgy and Bess, Rhapsody in Blue, and then Melissa Manchester.
And then Melissa Manchester, that's correct.
Chances are, 'cause I wear that silly grin the moment you come into view. Chances are you think that I'm in love with you.
So what we have here tonight, it looks like she's performing a tribute to the Fellas and her other hits. And so just addressing this quickly, the Fellas, in the late 80s or around 90, Manchester had a release called Tribute. This was for the Ella Fitzgerald, Judy Garland, and the like, Dionne Warwick, I believe. And then The Fellas was a follow-up of sorts. So we had Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Nat King Cole. Do you know what, from this disc, she will be performing?
Melissa has decided to include some charts entitled Ain't That a Kick in the Head?
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Chances Are, Through the Eyes of Love, Midnight Blue, Love is Just Around the Corner, Come In from the Rain, Walk On By. I mean, you can see this is just an incredible list.
Yeah.
Kind of Man a Woman Needs, Whenever I Call You Friend, couple more, Don't Cry Out Loud.
Of course.
Come Rain or Come Shine, one of my favorites, and How Do You Keep the Music Playing? So, I mean, this is just an extraordinary list. We are so looking forward to doing this.
Truly incredible, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, close to wrapping, but I'd like to hear what you have ahead of you. Other concerts, finals, getting that book out. You know, what's happening in your world in the near future after you rest on March 17th?
Yeah, let's see. I've got my upcoming Downey Symphony concert. I've been the music director of Downey Symphony for the past 10 years.
Okay, when is this? And
tell us more about it. Okay, that is going to be April 6th in Downey at the Downey Civic Theater. And wouldn't you know, I'm doing an all Gershwin concert.
Oh, yes.
So this is strictly all Gershwin. Again, some similarities with the San Bernardino Symphony Concert, Strike Up the Band, Catfish Row, and Bernadine Blaha, of course.
Yes.
We're going to make our second run with Rhapsody in Blue. And then I'm also adding the absolutely fabulous American in Paris. And then, in between those pieces, mm-hmm. I'm going to have a soprano singer who lives in Downey. She's going to sing a couple of favorite Gershwin songs sort of on the side there with some, you know, sexy blue lighting and, you know, a little I Got Rhythm and Someone to Watch Over Me and a couple little tunes in between the symphonic works. So that should be quite interesting.
Wow, that is nice.
Yeah. And then coming up this summer, I'm going to be conducting the Vermont Symphony Orchestra. They have a July 4th tour extravaganza that I'm going to be doing, which I'm really excited about. It's basically 7 concerts in a row, all in different spots of the state of Vermont. So
Ooh.
I'm really looking forward to that.
Like every day? Or every?
Yep.
Wow.
7 concerts in a row. Every day, a different place. It's going to be a whirlwind, but I'm really looking forward to it. Just mainly an American program with, you know, Candide and some Gershwin as well. I guess it's a Gershwin year for me. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you could do so much worse than having a Gershwin year.
Exactly.
That is incredible. We've been speaking with Sharon Lavery, guest conductor with the San Bernardino Symphony Orchestra for the performance March 16th at the California Theater of Performing Arts at 7:30. Wow, the day before St. Patrick's Day. I just saw that.
Good, because I'm mostly Irish.
And I'm Irish enough on that day.
There we go.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time.
Enjoyed this, David. I appreciate your time.
Me too. And I hope to see you on the 16th then.
Your chances are awfully good.
And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Sharon Lavery, John Jennings, and with Cirque du Soleil Crystal, Jorge Petit, and Julie Demarais. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Shireen Awad, Isel Quapio, and KVCR General Manager Keith Birkfeld. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVC Arts programs at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support, which you can do any time of the year. Just go to kvcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.